Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of November 24th. This week we visited Symphony Space, a concert hall here in Manhattan, to discuss the music of Olivier Messiaen, a Catholic composer whose centenary we celebrate this year. And in honor of that event, we have an article in the current issue by Father John Coleman called Maestro of Joy. We thought we'd begin this podcast with a clip from the Quartet for the End of Time. Now, this piece was played last week at a special concert at Symphony Space in honor of the centennial of Olivier Messiaen. Afterwards, we'll listen to our conversation with the Associate Artistic Director of Symphony Space and two musicians who were involved in the performance. Associate director here at Symphony Space, artistic director, Laura Kaminsky, who's going to talk a bit about why they decided to do a show to spotlight Messiaen's work. Obviously, it's its centenary, so it makes sense to do something on Messiaen, but why do you think he needs more attention, bring his work to the New York audience?
Well, you're right, it's a centenary, and why don't we listen to his music when he's 97 or 104? But we do. But I think we use these occasions to pay attention, particular attention. And as a composer myself, I've always felt that Messiaen's place as one of the leading compositional voices, really unique, powerful, honest compositional voices of the 20th century, that his music needs to be better known, needs to be heard, and this is an opportunity to celebrate it. When I was deciding to do this concert, what I wanted to do was try to find a way to span a good range of what he's about as a human being, as a composer, as a creative entity. So we chose the three pieces that we did, knowing that it would be a chamber concert, nothing huge like an orchestral work, to spotlight some of the things that were central to him as a composer. So the Merle Noir is a birdsong piece and shows in its six rather virtuosic minutes how he was so captivated by birds and spent a good deal of time transcribing their melodic lines. And he then captured that in his own unique voice and started building music around it. And this was one of the showcase pieces. It was his first bird piece. And it was the most contemporary piece on the program. It was written in the early 50s. The other two pieces were from the period during World War II. And the Quartet for the End of Time was, it's a singular work, really, in all the entire repertoire of all composers, because it's one of the major pieces that was written while he was a prisoner of war in a prisoner of war camp in Silesia. And it just speaks so incredibly powerfully to the human spirit to create beauty even in times of great distress, and that the creative impulse is there. And so there was no way you could do a Messiaen festival or celebration without acknowledging this tremendous work, which is really, as I said, one of the most important pieces of chamber music in the entire canon. And then when we chose to do the Vision de la Main, that was a piece that he wrote shortly after coming out of the prisoner of war camp, and it's very much one of his spiritual pieces coming out of biblical texts and his own deep Catholicism. And it's an incredibly powerful virtuosic work for two pianos. It's almost an hour long, and the pianists, the level of concentration and intensity that they have to bring to it, and the level of communication that they have as a duo to really give it life, is so extraordinary that there aren't tons of performances of it. So when we were deciding on the programming for Symphony Space for this year, I always reach out to artists that I respect and trust, and Ursula Oppens had been on our series last year, and so I wanted to see what was going to be most meaningful to her to do in this season in New York at Symphony Space. And she had two desires, and one was to participate in a Messiaen event. So in a sense, the programming that I'm trying to do here very much is sensitive to specific repertoire, specific composers, and then the right performers to build a community that are committed to bringing this music out. And I want Symphony Space to become even more a hub over time, where a group of great musicians know that this is a place where exciting performances happen, where interesting repertoire is done, where they can propose ideas and we can work to find a context for them. So it's not just a string of concerts, but that all events have some relationship, whether they're counterpoint or juxtapositions or more of the same, that there's a context for why everything's programmed and who's performing.
Well, thanks, and we'll certainly, when we put our podcast up, we'll put up some more information about Symphony Space's calendar for the upcoming year. Maybe we can just end by talking a little bit about, as a composer, one of the things that might interest our listeners is, you know, the particularly religious, spiritual element of Messiaen's work, and how exactly, I mean, if for somebody who's not a musician, maybe you can explain to the lay listener, how does Messiaen do that? How does he, you know, is it the technical, is it the instruments he uses, or the certain way he writes his music? Maybe you can kind of explore that.
Well, I think that as a composer, there are often two entry points into writing a piece. I mean, there are many, but sometimes they're musical constructs. So you get an idea for a group of notes or a set of chords or a melodic line, and then the creative impulse is, what can I do with that material? How can I give it a life? How can it create a narrative? And sometimes it's an extra musical idea. And in Messiaen's case, because he was so profoundly mystically Catholic, he was deeply spiritual, but he was kind of a mystic in a way, he was very moved by stories from the Bible, from passages in the Old and New Testament, from some of the miracles. And so he tried to find the music that laid those out. So he would be inspired by a particular text from the Bible and then tried to realize it in sound. Just as his spirituality was specifically religious, and then it was also very general because of his great love of nature, he then would be in nature and try to respond to the power of the mountain or the stars or the birds and capture that in a unique way to express it. So I think for him, his profound spirituality needed to be expressed, and he would find these concrete forms, you know, these texts that inspired the titles or the imagery that led him to write, or more generically, the vastness of the natural world, which is, of course, connected to the spiritual world. I think that Messiaen is a composer not unlike Bach, and that he really felt that he was writing his music for the glory of God, and that in a way he was a vessel, and that it was some kind of divine spirit that motivated him to write, but that he couldn't help himself, that it was guided by God.
Again, that was our conversation with Laura Kaminsky, the Associate Artistic Director of Symphony Space. Now we'll transition to our conversation with the two musicians who took part in the centennial performance. Tara O'Connor, and Margaret Campmeyer. Tara played the flute in the piece that Laura mentioned, the bird song, Le Merle Noir, and Margaret played the piano on both that piece and the quartet for The End of Time.
Well, we're backstage here at Symphony Space Concert Hall in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and we just finished listening to two pieces from the work of Olivier Messiaen, whose centenary we're celebrating this year. And we're sitting with two of the artists, musicians who took part in the compositions, and we're going to talk with them. First, Tara O'Connor, who did the birdsong piece, Blackbird, Le Merle Noir. Maybe you could talk a bit about what you find particularly compelling about Messiaen's work.
Well, the piece is incredibly imaginative. Instantly it captures your soul. You hear this incredible murky beginning in the piano, this chromatic, blurry sound, and then you're in the woods and you're hearing birds. And you hear a little snippet of something, and then it evolves into a longer snippet of the same thing, and then it spins out. And then you hear another call, and the same thing happens again. And then it's followed by these incredibly calm sections where we answer each other, much as birds do in nature. You hear a bird call, and then a bird will call back. And then this section then is repeated again slightly differently. But at the end of the piece, after these incredible chords happen, this beautiful stillness, there's this typical Messiaen kind of chords that change. The harmonies change while the flute line stays exactly the same. And then it's as if you're in the forest, there's stillness, and all the birds take off at once, just incredibly. And you hear this an unbelievable cacophony. And it's very hard, I think, to separate the flute sound from the piano sound. And the piece just ends very quickly, and it's shocking, actually. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, one of the things I enjoyed about it was kind of this back and forth, as you said, between right. The flute and the piano. And have you done this before many times? Or?
Yeah, quite a few times. Yeah. Yeah, we've played together a lot for many years.
Many years.
Many wonderful years.
You know, I was going to say, it's been fantastic. I mean, I love playing with my friend here and colleague. I was going to say one thing about the Messiaen. The middle part of the Messiaen, it's like there's a canon that goes on, but it's like incredibly complicated, row, row, row your boat, you know. It's really, it's almost, but you hear them separately in the first half, and the second half you hear them together. And it's just, wow, how is that even possible? And it's just so beautiful. It really is so beautiful. I think that's the thing that I'm so struck with Messiaen, and I was reading about him, and he said, you know, color happens when you know, if you play all the notes in a scale, then it's sort of black, gray, you know. But when you start removing one note here or there, then you get all these colors. And I mean, we know that Messiaen is an incredible, he's a religious man, is mystical, and very much involved in nature and obsessed, actually, with nature and birdsong and his catalog. And he wrote down all these birds pieces, and he would go out and listen to them and just write, notate the best that he could, what he was hearing, and then how then that grew into these incredible works, and how it really, from the beginning of his compositions through, you hear it in everything.
Now, I should say, we're also here with Margaret Campmeyer, who was the pianist who was on that piece. Maybe you could talk about, I mean, it's obvious when listening to the piece that the flute kind of mimics the sound of the bird. What part does the piano play in that?
Well, the piano part doesn't have too many bird sounds, per se, but the piano really sets up the canon aspect, and so we play off each other that way, so that maybe the piano part's a little more abstract in that.
Maybe we can transition just to talk to this about the second piece that was performed, which was the Quartet for the End of Time, which is really extraordinary, the story behind this piece. Maybe, Margaret, you can just explain it.
Yeah, well, I'll say a few words. There's been many wonderful things written about it, probably better than I can sum it up right now. But it was written, Messiaen was a prisoner of war in the Second World War, and it was written in a prisoner of war camp in 1941. And there happened to be a cellist and a clarinetist and a violinist there, and he himself played the piano. And he wrote all the movements, not in the order that you hear, but he wrote them all, and then they performed it in the camp.
Given this extraordinary story, when you perform this work, is this something that's in the back of your mind, just thinking about how this was conceived?
Yeah, it's impossible not to think of that. On so many levels, there's the religious aspect, and then there's the sort of innovative musical aspect to it and rhythmic aspects, and then the whole history. It's all together. It makes it such a rich experience.
Yeah, I just joined you backstage after you were done, and it's obviously demanding. I mean, not just physically, but emotionally. Maybe you can talk a bit about that.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of piece you really can't play unless you give it your all. You know, it's sort of like being in the NBA finals or something. You just have to do it, you know. And I mean that in the best way. And when it's finished, I often feel like someone has taken my blood away from me, drop by drop. But you know, there's a moment where it starts to come back. But it's that kind of draining feeling.
You both mentioned sort of the religious, spiritual aspects of his work. Maybe we can talk more about that. What it is in particular about both of these pieces that is particularly spiritual. Tara, maybe you can start with that.
Sure. Well, you know, the spiritual part of Messiaen, I think, really relates to how he who he was as a person. And I mean, he spent something like 35 years in church playing organ, right? So he's Catholic. And then his whole obsession with nature, I think, and being outdoors and hearing birds was something that was very, very important to his musical language and his style of writing. And he spent a lot of time, as I said, notating them. But he said, and I have a quote here that I'd like to read because I think it's really, really interesting, actually. It doesn't really talk much about his spiritual thing, but it does talk about his relationship with nature, which ties into that perfectly. Sure. He says, "Birds sing in extremely fast tempos, which are absolutely impossible for our instruments. And so I have to transcribe the song in a slower tempo. Birds are able to sing in high registers and intervals that are inaccessible to our instruments. And so I notate them 1, 2, 3, and 4 octaves lower. And I keep the same scale of values between." And he goes on to say that everything is enlarged, but the relationships stay the same, so that my version is still exact. It's the transposition of what I have heard on a more human scale, which I think is really kind of amazing. And, you know, his interest in birdsong eventually led, I mean, this piece is his first foray into birdsong, into a piece solely about birdsong. And his catalog for birds piano solo was, like, I guess in the 1950s, 1951, right? Mm-hmm. And this piece was written as a flute concours for the Paris Conservatory for their final competition. So, and it had to be technically demanding and all of those things. But I don't think Messiaen was concerned about how technically demanding it was. This was just his honest way of transcribing what he had heard and then making this incredible piece. And even, I mean, when I hear the chords, you know, you definitely, you hear chords that are golden, you hear chords that are, you hear the entire rainbow in his music, which is also very, very nature-like, and it's incredibly colorful and imaginative.
Yes, that's another area of his work, and one of his concerns, in addition to birdsong, was also color, and the association of color with music was a big part of what he was doing. And also, you mentioned nature. He wrote, I understand, there's a Mount Messiaen in Zion National Park in Utah.
Well, that piece is from the Canyons to the Stars, is the English translation. I won't butcher it with my bad French. But what, you know, that was a commission for Alice Tully for Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, or the opening of Tully Hall, I believe. And he could have written really about anything. And we were talking about this earlier, but he didn't write it about New York. I mean, Alice Tully lived in New York, and he went out west where I mean, when you're out in nature, you're really one with the universe, you know. There's no running water. You're looking around at this incredible, incredibly beautiful planet. It's untouched by human hands. And what you see when you go from Bryce Canyon to the Grand Canyon to Zion, which is apparently, I've never been to Zion, but I've been to Bryce, and you can see the geological formations. You hear incredible, the sound in the hoodoos. You can hear all of this in Messiaen's music. And I've sat in the middle of Canyons to Stars with Peter Serkin, and with, you know, like 40 wind players and 6 percussion, and it's all there. It's really, it's the most incredibly, like you said, it's incredibly demanding, it's incredibly spiritual. There's something so uniquely Messiaen about it. I mean, nobody else writes like this. Nobody else sounds like this. It's really unique, I think, to him, and it's incredibly special. And actually playing it puts you in a spiritual place, in a place that, like, as Margaret was saying, that it's so exhausting. It's when you really give your all for what that is beyond the written page, and just hearing and experiencing that and being part of that, it's extraordinary, really.
Well, maybe, Margaret, you can speak to that, too, about Messiaen was inspired not only by nature, but also, you know, Catholic mysticism. And it, in particular, as our article says, the joy that can be found in kind of the Christian story. He doesn't dwell on the kind of the passion of Christ, for example, but more on the resurrection. Yeah. He's more interested
in peace.
Yeah. That's notable, especially in that quartet for the end of the time, which was composed under such kind of grim circumstances, yet that's not what it's about.
Right, right. And it's important to understand the end of time as a good thing in his sense and in a biblical sense. And it is somewhat of a pun, too, because Messiaen did invent a new rhythmic system, and so that quartet for the end of time has something also to do with rhythm as we know it up to that point. So he used these sort of palindromic rhythms and all sorts of interesting patterns. And just to go back to the birds, the third movement, the solo clarinet movement, was actually the first movement that was written. And Messiaen spoke about that as it's the abyss of the birds, which is contrasting with the end of time. But at the same time, the birds are free. So you have this sort of integration and contrast of material, the spirituality, the intellectual capacity of the rhythmic innovation, and so on. And you can sort of hook into the piece on so many levels, I think.
I was looking up something about that as well because I thought it's so interesting. Yeah. He says that the abyss is time with its sadness and its weariness, but the birds are the opposite, as you said, their desire for light, for stars, for rainbows, and for jubilant songs, which is what they produce. So,
right. Yeah, our piece is called Maestro of Joy, and it's because he does, that is what's important to him, are these joyful moments. And you can see why birds in particular would draw his interest.
Right. Absolutely. Who do you know walks around the city singing arpeggios or singing like incredible songs all the time? You know, a professional musician, that's work, you know, but birds, just out of an expression of their, of who they are, that's just what they do. It's kind of remarkable. It makes them unique in nature, really. Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, Messiaen is inspirational to musicians just for who he was and what he's done, but he also inspired other composers. And one of my other favorite composers is Takemitsu, and the reason why Takemitsu became a composer was because of the music of Messiaen. Mm. And if you think about Eastern religion and just the Eastern kind of frame of mind and place and with spirituality and nature, they're very, very globally connected in a spiritual way. So I think that's kind of amazing.
Mm. It is amazing that Messiaen can be so specific and so Catholic in the sense of all-inclusive with his music.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll end on that. I just want to thank you again both for discussing this and for letting us take part in this. We're listening to Vision de l'Amen, which was also performed at Symphony Space on the night that I visited. I should mention that both of these samples were given to us by Symphony Space, but were not recordings of the performance that was given that night. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.